I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Any outdoor plans will be triple digits for today and tomorrow.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you. We are taking your calls 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Right back to our phone lines. Juan is waiting very patiently in West Valley City. Good morning. What is your question?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my phone call. I love you guys' show.
Oh, thanks so much.
And then I have a couple questions real quick. Several episodes or shows before, I heard Tom mention the quack grass. I'm guessing it's the tall, wide grass that is taking over my lawn, and some miniature clover. Is there anything I can fight it with?
Well, I have. Oh, there we go. I found a problem. I have quack grass in areas of my lawn, and spray wise, there's not much you can do. But I started. Because Santaquin isn't on the same drought restrictions of a lot of areas, I'm not overwatering, but I am sufficiently watering that area. And I've noticed that my Kentucky bluegrass has started to keep the quackgrass in check. And so that's one thing you can do is just make sure you're mowing high and water correctly. But one thing you can try also is to let the quackgrass grow taller so that it's 2 or 3 inches above the level of the Kentucky bluegrass. And you can use what's called a wicking wand, which looks like a hockey stick with a sponge on the bottom of it. You can pick them up sometimes from like Steve Regan or IFA or off of Amazon, and then just wipe the tops of the quackgrass with that wicking wand with some glyphosate or Roundup in it. And that will go in and knock it out that way. But that's about the only other way I know of.
Nice, nice. Okay. What about the miniature clover?
That you can spray with a lawn weed killer in the fall. Now, does the clover have yellow flowers or white flowers?
Yellow, kind of yellow.
So you're
seeing... If I let them grow tall enough, they turn a little bit yellow. But I've been picking some by hand, you know.
Yeah, you're seeing something called black medic, which is related to clover and related to alfalfa. And it's really low growing. And so if you have problems with black medic, a lot of times the soil is compacted and it might be a little bit drought stressed, which I get this year because we're on drought restrictions. What I would do for the black medic is you can spray it out, and it's sometimes a short-lived perennial, but in the spring you'd want to put a pre-emergent on, and you would use one made by a company called Bio Advanced. And Bio Advanced. And it's called Season Long Lawn Weed Control.
Lawn Weed Control, yes. Okay. My other question is that earlier this spring, before I planted my tomatoes, I kind of make some my own compost with eggshells and banana peels like a month before I plant on my tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
They're doing pretty good, but my Roma, I only get one crop, and the plant is still turning brown. You know, like 3/4 of the plant kind of brown, and up on top it's green, but it's got a huge tomatoes. I don't know what's wrong with that. I don't see any more blossoms.
The Roma tomato may have a disease in it that we've been seeing all over. And for some reason, a lot of tomatoes have been really struggling this year, but especially Romas.
Yeah, I only want to go in to get one cut out of them two plants. The rest, you know, they're doing good.
Yeah, we're struggling this year with the tomatoes. Okay. And if you have a lot of healthy tomatoes, you're lucky.
Okay, thanks, Tom.
All right.
Thank you, Maria. Have
a good day. So much. You too. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, does Revive work and is it worth it?
Depends on what you're doing. It's just one of those questions that I need to know the use case. And so one thing that people like Revive for is for when their animals, especially dogs, go to the bathroom on the lawn, mm-hmm. they can use Revive and then just lightly water in where they went to the bathroom, and you're far less likely to get the dead spots in your lawn because the animal urine washes through the soil much more quickly. Now, people are promoting it for drought, saying, oh, use half the water. That's just not possible. There's a minimum amount of water that turf grass requires to stay green. And if you cut your water in half, even if you're using something, you know, one of these surfactants that are being advertised, you are overwatering. And it's just that simple. And so, but the Revive can give you some temporary help with opening up the soil through, just because it is a surfactant that will allow water to penetrate in. And sometimes they're called chemical aerators, mm-hmm. but they don't last long. So maybe a month and they have to be reapplied. And so for me, I might use those if I have animals or something, but longer term, I'm going to focus on aeration, on hollow core aeration.
All right. John is in Sandy. Good morning, John. What is your question?
I'm thinking about redoing a park strip that is 16 foot wide. I'd like to put landscape fabric down and rock, but I'd also like to put a couple of trees and some shrubs. Does the landscape fabric sour the ground, or is that something that I shouldn't be concerned about and just cut a couple of X's through it and do the planting?
I'm really torn on the landscape fabric because what we're finding is that it works well for around 2 to 3 years. But what will happen is weed seeds will blow in the wind and come through irrigation water and just different sources and land on top of the rocks and the fabric. Soil in windstorms also blows in and collects in the rocks. And over time, you get weeds germinating on top of the fabric that root into it, and it becomes a problem. Then the other problem is sometimes the fabric can interfere with oxygen and water penetration into the soil and also interfere with proper evaporation from the soil. And so the fabric it's not evil. There are some uses for it. You know, and if you were going to go in and just put the rock and gravel down and a few trees and call it good, eventually you're going to be weeding in there anyway. But if you've got a bunch of perennials, a bunch of shrubs, things you're going to be, you know, swapping out, then that fabric is even less useful because every time you cut a hole, you create opportunity for weeds to come up. And so what I usually encourage people to do, unless they're just putting it down and leaving it alone, is to skip the fabric, put down the 3 inches of rock, and then use a combination of pre-emergent and maybe a weed torch or maybe some sort of weed killer to knock the weeds out of the rocks that way.
Okay, so there's no conclusive evidence one way or the other than whether it really sours the soil.
When you say sour the soil, that's such a nebulous term. I'm not quite sure what you mean.
It makes it so the plants won't grow in it.
The conditions I described, interfering with water penetration and evaporation from the soil and interfering with the oxygen of the water are the main problems, but it doesn't... Mm-hmm. In and of itself, it doesn't ruin the soil, and it can also interfere with organic matter penetrating into the soil, which with the rocks there is going to be there anyway.
Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful. I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you so much for your call this morning. Our next person, Ton, says they have a plant out front of their house, very aggressive. They've pulled it out before, but it just returns. They've been told that it's soapwort, and they want to know what you think the best way is to get rid of it.
It's probably not soapwort.
Okay. What would you think it is?
I have no idea. What they can do is just keep pulling it, and eventually it'll sap the energy, or they can cut it and then dab the stem with a little bit of weed killer and see if that knocks it out.
So that might be a better way to go.
Yeah, because the only soapworts we grow are perennials, and they can spread a little bit, but they don't get out of hand, and they're not, when you pull them, they're not super aggressive.
Okay. Marianne is in North Ogden. Good morning, Marianne. What is your question?
Good morning. I have some problems with my broccoli. I've been growing broccoli for probably 20 years, and I always grow it from seeds, and I can't find the variety that I've used in the past anywhere online or anything. And the current varieties that I grow, the buds, you know, the heads that come up are really tight and yellow. And then the little green things that are supposed to be the heads just kind of are sporadic in the middle. Am I doing it wrong? Is there a better seed?
I think that you're running into heat issues, and be patient. As it cools down, hopefully you'll get some better flower heads on them.
Well, it's been the last, 3 years that I haven't had.
Have you been growing the same variety, or have you been having those problems with all the varieties?
Well, I've grown, green Goliath and Comet for years and years, and then I can no longer find those. So, this year I planted Gypsy Hybrid. I've planted the Waltham. I've planted, Destiny, and I'm just not having any good success.
Man, the only thing I can figure is heat. And if they're all doing the same thing, that's environmental conditions causing the problems.
Okay.
The only other thing I would know to try is to maybe get some low tunnels, so with little hoops, and put, as we heat up, put 30% shade over the top of the broccoli and see if cooling them down helps.
Okay. Well, that's helpful. I didn't realize that. Okay, thank you.
Well, it may or may not be, but it's going to be my best shot, because they're all doing the same thing. It's probably heat issues, and so that's why I'd put the 30% shade over to see if you can cool them down a bit.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you.
All right, Marianne, thanks for your call this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Next listener wants to know, Ton, when's the best time to plant and remove fruit trees?
Well, removing, if you're removing them any time, there's no specific time of year because you're just taking them out. But you're pretty much limited to planting fruit trees in the spring, because that's when they're available. You can, the best time's actually late summer around Labor Day, and you can sometimes find them, but the selection is a lot less than what you would normally see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I usually recommend people start shopping for fruit trees in mid to late March through early May, depending on when the nurseries get their shipments in, including the box stores, and plant them then.
I think part of the removal question is that they have a tree that's not been bearing fruit for very long. So the other part of their question is, how long should you give a fruit tree to bear fruit before you do take it out?
Well, it depends on, there's a lot of variability, but generally fruit trees that you buy from a garden center should start bearing fruit by the third or fourth year. And you actually, if they bear fruit sooner, you pull it off when the fruit's small so that you can get the tree more established. But I've seen apple trees sometimes take up to 10 to 12 years, but people don't want to wait that long. And so oftentimes I'll just say, we'll take it out and put another one in. That's where I see the most problems. It seems like 1 in 5 or 1 in 10, for whatever reason, even if it's on a rootstock that causes early fruit production, doesn't. And you end up just taking it out.
All right. Ruth is in Orem. Good morning, Ruth. What is your question this morning?
Good morning. We have a backyard full of vine weed or morning glory or whatever you call it. And they're coming today to spray it, but we wonder if it should be mowed first and then sprayed.
No. The more foliage you have to have exposed to the spray, the more that's absorbed into the roots. And if you mow it, there's going to be a lot less exposed to that weed killer, and you could actually have not as much dye because it was mowed.
I see. And do you recommend any particular kind of weed killer this time of year?
Well, it depends. Are you spraying it in your lawn or a driveway or where?
It's in the lawn, the backyard lawn.
I would use something with quinclorac in it.
Quinclorac?
Yes, it's Quinclorac.
Okay. Okay, and there are big patches of brown where it looks like it's dyed, but I understand that's typical for this summer, and so we'll just keep watering that and hope it'll come back in the fall.
You can. You could send some samples up to the USU Pest Lab to see if you have any diseases or anything in it. Have you tried pulling up on the grass to see if it comes up easily? I would go out and just pull on the brown grass and see if it comes up really easily without roots. If it does, then you have grubs in there or some sort of insect that will need to be treated. But if you know there's enough moisture and you would stick a screwdriver into the soil, you know, after you irrigate and in those brown areas, and if the screwdriver goes in easily, there's enough irrigation there and the lawn doesn't pull up, that would point to a fungal disease. But it very well could be drought stress, but you do need to check for the other things.
Okay. Thanks for your help.
Thanks, Ruth, for your call this morning. Next caller would be Jim in Sandy. And good morning, Jim. What is your question this morning?
We have three grow boxes that are not on the ground. And this year, first time in many years, we had a big problem with squash bugs. Haven't had that in probably 10 years. And I'm wondering, in those grow boxes, is there anything other than heating that soil up to about 140 degrees in something like a cement mixer or something? Is there anything that could be put on there that would dissipate before the next planting next spring?
No, the squash bugs overwinter in debris. So like old weeds under bark mulch, they could overwinter in your boxes. But if you get everything out and have bare soil and then turn that soil with a spade, that would help. But, I mean, even in a cement mixer, I don't know what you're going to do to heat it up in there, you know, because it's just extremely difficult. And even though that would work, it is not really practical because it would take so much energy to heat the soil up to that temperature. And then to be able to do it, there's just not a practical solution to be able to.
Okay. One thing that I haven't heard anybody mention to people that are not watering their lawns is making sure they take care of the weeds so that the neighborhood doesn't get inundated with all kinds of weeds, particularly the field vine weed. And if you could mention that once in a while, it would help some of us that are trying to at least maintain our yards.
It is a frustrating thing, isn't it? Thanks, Jim, for your call this morning. Todd, I'm going to let you respond to that.
I mean, it's important, and you may have community codes and covenants for the particular neighborhood that you have to. But, you know, I've noticed that in drought-stressed lawns, certain weeds grow really well. And, you know, you've got things like tall fescue, the quack grass, and bindweed. And so if you run into that, you may need to do some extra spraying or extra pulling to see if you can keep that maintained.
Okay, I'm going to try and squeeze Haley's call in here. Good morning, Haley. What is your question this morning?
Hi, thanks for having me. So we have some weird patches of grass. Like half of our grass is super green and grows super well. And part of it is just dead and will not grow. And we fertilize, and we're in Saratoga Springs, so we water 2 times a week per our city's recommendations. But we just don't know what else to do to try and get these little patches of grass back. They're about 2 feet by 4 feet patches that just are dead.
is the pattern fairly consistent in the lawn to where you can go approximately, 5 feet and there's another one, or 10 feet and there's another one, or are they random?
I mean, it's in the same place. Is that what you're asking?
Yeah. I saw a lawn last night that had dead patches about every 10 feet, and you could tell that the sprinklers were either clogged or they didn't have enough water pressure. And sometimes you'll see spots like that in your lawn to where it's green in the spring and then it browns out, and then it's green the next spring and then it browns out. And that's usually irrigation system inefficies. But how many years has
we put even a hose on it?
Yeah.
We've been here 4 years.
Okay. And it's just that one spot all the time?
It's just that one spot all the time that's just completely dead.
Okay. So what I would do is, before you put the hose on, is get a screwdriver, as long as your soil's not too rocky, and just try
it's pretty clay, yeah.
I mean, if it's clay, that's fine, but if it's rocky, it won't work. But
okay.
What I would do, we may need to hold you over because of a break coming up, but what I would do is stick a screwdriver into the lawn and see how easily it penetrates. So that if it goes in easy, it's not an irrigation problem. You may want to get the soil tested to see for some reason if there's contaminants in there.
All right. We're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, the number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. And at the top of the hour, it's WaterWise Tips at 10.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.